This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. This week, we got one of the biggest updates we've seen in the ongoing work of the House of Representatives Select Committee that's investigating the insurrection of the nation's capital on January 6th, 2021, and the events leading up to it. In a court filing, the committee's legal team claimed they've gathered evidence that Trump and others he was working with to overturn the 2020 election may have broken several laws. That comes from numerous depositions from top aides to former President Trump and former Vice President Mike Pence. David Schultz is Distinguished University Professor of Political Science and Legal Studies. He teaches political science at Hamline University and is a professor of law at the University of Minnesota. David, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you for having me again.
There's a lot going into this, David. Can you give us the basics? What does this suggestion of possible criminal activity, where did this come from?
Okay, so this is the January 6th commission that's doing our January 6th committee, which is reviewing the events of that day. They've gathered an incredible amount of information, as you indicated in your introduction here. And in a filing that was released a couple days ago, which is about 100 pages long, they detail all the factual allegations regarding how Trump worked with his staff, and staff tried to convince him that first there was no election fraud, but he nonetheless persisted in what he was doing. And it talks about how he and several of people associated with him, including John Eastman, as a private attorney, basically conspired to try to overthrow the 2020 election. And so what we found in the document that was released the other day was an effort to try to get what's called a breaking of the attorney-client confidentiality between Trump and his attorney, John Eastman. And in there, what was indicated are three possible criminal charges that could be brought against Donald Trump, as well as some of his associates. And if I can briefly mention them here, one is that the argument is that the president and maybe others obstructed or tried to obstruct an official government proceeding of the United States. That is the counting of the electoral votes. Second, there's an argument that in fact, the president and his campaign engaged in a criminal conspiracy to defraud the United States by trying to trick people or fool people into thinking there was widespread voter fraud. And then the last is that there may have been under state law in the District of Columbia, there might have been a violation of what's called common law fraud, deception. But put this together, what they're saying at this point is that because we believe we have enough evidence at this point to believe that the president and his associates may have been breaking the law, that is a basis for us to want to now what? Force John Eastman, his attorney, to divulge private communications between him and Donald Trump for the purposes of us investigating criminal activity. This is pretty significant.
This is an effort, as you said, to get access to these emails, overcome the attorney-client privilege claim here. This is a congressional committee, though, not a prosecutorial agency or body. What would it take to get from there, these claims from a congressional committee, to somebody actually filing charges under those claims?
Well, what could happen at this point is once they complete their report, they could then refer this over to the Justice Department, and the Justice Department could, based upon this report, opt to indict on, let's say, at least the federal charges. Obviously, it has limited authority over what the District of Columbia does. But that would be the process at this point in terms of preparing a report that would then be used as the basis, perhaps, for the Justice Department to indict the president or any of his ex-president or any of his associates.
We don't have a lot of precedent for ex-presidents being charged with crimes, right? It's a pretty tall order.
It is a very tall order at this point. And the closest we've ever gotten is Richard Nixon. And of course, this was all about what? Crimes that Nixon allegedly committed while he was president of the United States. Back in the 70s, the argument was that a sitting president could not be indicted, which is why for some people who might have remembered the phrase Nixon and as an unindicted co-conspirator, it wasn't clear that a sitting president could be indicted. But there's nobody that I know of, any respectable legal authority that would say that an ex-president cannot be indicted for crimes, even for crimes committed while he was president of the United States. So if this were to happen, this would be an unprecedented move in American legal history.
Right. We didn't get that question addressed, right? Because President Ford, who succeeded former President Nixon, pardoned him, and that prevented these questions from going into the courts. Do you think they might have without that pardon?
I think at that point, had Nixon no longer been president and had it moved forward in terms of an investigation and indictment, it's more than likely that he probably would have been indicted. And you're absolutely correct that Gerald Ford decided to issue a presidential pardon to prevent that from going forward. Again, if you look at Justice Department documents from back in the 1970s, there seemed to be a consensus that yes, an ex-president, a person who's no longer a president or not president, could be indicted. The whole focus then was on a sitting president. And that's why Ford pardoned him, because Nixon at that point no longer enjoyed any type of presumption of perhaps not being able to be indicted.
Talking to David Schultz from Hamline University and University of Minnesota, looking at the January 6th commission, some news out there in a court filing saying potential to believe that criminal activity committed by President Trump and some of his closest advisors in their efforts to overturn the 2020 presidential election results. David, in this, as you say, 100-page filing, there were some emails, I think new ones that we hadn't seen before, related to John Eastman. On January 6th, back and forths with the staff of Vice President Pence, Eastman trying to persuade the staff, to persuade Pence to put off the counting of electoral votes, even saying at one point, acknowledging this would be at least a minor violation of relevant law. Did you see anything shocking in this?
I did see that. I mean, first off, and I think that this report or this memorandum made it clear, is that there is no basis in the law whatsoever for arguing that the Vice President of the United States or that Congress really has the authority to set aside electoral votes. The Constitution and the 12th Amendment are very clear on this. And part of what the court is arguing here is to say that there was no good faith argument that Eastman could make to the president to say, you know, we think you have some authority to order Pence or get Pence to do this. And so Eastman is basically telling Pence to do something that clearly, and I would say clearly, any lawyer worth his or her salt would know that this was not possible under the Constitution. But yet, needless to say, he pushes on. And what I think the purpose of this request for privileged information is to find out what else Eastman did. What else was he advising the president? And so this is what makes it so significant here, is that we effectively have somebody who's providing advice to the president, if everything in here is true and accurate, that was basically telling the president, guess what, violate federal law and urge your vice president to violate federal law and the U.S. Constitution.
There's been a lot of attention to testimony to the committee that suggests that people were telling, as you mentioned, telling then-President Trump that there hadn't been significant fraud. Also, out in a new book, former Attorney General William Barr says basically the last thing he did as Attorney General was telling President Trump, no, there wasn't significant widespread fraud. You lost the election. Why is it important for people to make that case? Is that related to that potential fraud?
Well, I think what's important at this point is that, first, if people have broken the law, they should be held accountable. But two, and I think without being too dramatic here, this is about American democracy, that even if at the end of the day, Trump or his associates aren't indicted, it's a statement about saying that there are certain things you can't do in a democracy, in a country like the United States, and that includes what? Basically trying to overturn democratically elected elections. And you can't go around what lying about the fact that there's voter fraud and then use those lies as a basis for trying to challenge election results. I think that's the broader point that comes out of this, is that sometimes principle matters. And I think this is partly what's going on here.
I won't ask you to predict the future, David. How likely do you think it is, though, that somebody, say an attorney general or someone within the Justice Department, would pick up this information from the congressional committee and run with it and indict the president's advisors, maybe the former president himself?
I think the pressure is going to be tremendous on at least going after the president's advisors. The question becomes, to what extent going after Donald Trump Is that something that the Justice Department wants to take on in terms of it being potentially an incredibly divisive issue? And maybe that's why Gerald Ford back 50 years ago pardoned Richard Nixon to say Nixon probably did something wrong, but we'd be better off, what, basically saying he did something wrong, pardon him, and let history be the judge. And that could very well be what would happen too.
And David, in our last minute or so, apart from these possible indictments, do you see any other safeguards, things that need to be changed to prevent a current or future president from losing an election, but going to this long effort to overturn that outcome?
Well, first off, they're talking about revising the Electoral Count Act in terms of what Congress's role is. I think part of that is necessary in terms of just simply making clear what the law can do. But remember, presidential elections and Senate and U.S. House elections are done on a state-by-state basis. And I think what needs to be done is to insulate the election process, the election administration, even more from political influence. And what's dangerously going on right now is just the opposite, politicizing it. We probably need to insulate it more so that this doesn't happen in the future.
David, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you to the audience.
That's David Schultz, Distinguished University Professor of Political Science and Legal Studies at Hamline University, Professor of Law at the University of Minnesota. He joined us today for a look at a new court filing from the House Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection that lays out evidence for a possible criminal case against former President Donald Trump and some of his associates.